Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Listen, I mean, we hit Brian twice yesterday. Buzz by his tower there, 1-1 pitch. So, I kind of had a feeling it was going to happen. I just thought it was high. That was it.
Did you have a feeling it might be you?
Yeah.
Middays on the Score.
Deadly weapons thrown at guys' heads for no apparent reason. This hour is brought to you by MegaPros. Repair, remodel, renovate, megapros.com. Connor McKnight, please provide me with a single-digit number.
This one has stakes to it, too. There's a big thing on the line for a pair of tickets to go see the Cubs and Sox. And 7.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Caller 7 right now. Nice job, Connor. Contest line. The contest line, 312-591-6700, is going to win a pair of tickets to see the Cubs take on the Sox at Wrigley Field on Tuesday, courtesy of 670 The Score Radio, home of Cubs baseball. We have another pair of tickets to give away between now and noon. That will be a pair of tickets to Wednesday's game. We are talking about some of the ongoing silliness and stupidity in baseball between big, rough, tough baseball players that need to throw things at each other, and then they hit you through something at me, I'm throwing something at you.
So you heard Nolan Arenado coming back there, and there's a bit of, I don't know, understanding and resignation in what he's talking about. Like, he was asked, did you think it might be you? And he said yes, and then everyone laughed. And it is kind of funny because he's the Rockies' best player, so that kind of understanding, the knowledge, his knowledge that a baseball's coming at him at some point during the game is, you know, it's kind of funny. It's gallows humor a little bit. I just think, though, that his understanding of having to play the game that way masks something that's going on with a lot of players. I mean, you ask Tim Anderson, you ask Javi Baez, they've both been pretty outspoken about it. Neither of them really want baseball to be played this way anymore. Neither of them are all that interested in keeping up the kinds of beef that necessitate playing this game anymore, except for maybe Tim with the Royals, and even then he's not hitting or throwing at anyone. He's just socking a whole bunch of dingers when he gets the chance. There's a growing segment of players that are less and less interested with playing this way. That is fact. Inasmuch as, and it is still the same, and it is also fact, that there are still players that are accepting of playing the game this way. I don't think those two forces are like necessarily fighting each other right now.
Well, the primary force also is old managers, and we know that that's changing too, as front offices increasingly are controlling teams and will not want to put their prized assets in harm's way needlessly. I think that that's going to be a force to end some of this stuff.
Maybe, yeah, but I do think, though, that the new school manager, you know, this idea of your, you know, Gabe Kapler heading out there with all of his analytics or, you know, whatever, I think these two ideas are somewhat exclusive. I don't think that just because you're a new, vastly underpaid and less experienced manager that you will also think that this beanball stuff needs to die, because players get that from all kinds of different places, whether it's your high school coach, whether it's your little league coach, whether it's some coach you had at single A that pounded this into your brain. You can be interested in like the pitch lab and Kinetrex and all the binders of information and also think that this kind of thing is how you stop your best hitter getting hit.
This hour is brought to you by MegaPros. Repair, remodel, renovate, megapros.com. It's Tony and Mattson on the Score. Tony!
What's up, man?
All right, no Tony.
We miss Tony.
Instead, it'll be Jay on the north side. Hello, Jay.
What's up, guys? Hey, typically agree with you on most things, love the analytics, but totally disagree. Last night, the Cubs did what they pretty much had to do.
Why?
And I do think it put Denver in check, or Colorado in check, because you can't let somebody, how many games have they played where Bryant's been hit in the last, what, 10 games?
But it obviously doesn't deter them. That's the point.
It did, though, last night.
It's not a matter of let.
Anybody else hit again? I don't think anybody else hit again. Dan, you can't let somebody come in and just throw out
your
best.
It's not a matter of the problem is the word let. It doesn't change anything.
You think they're not doing it on purpose?
No, I know, but nothing you do is going to stop them from doing it.
It did it last night. They hit Arenado.
No, the umpires did.
No, the umpires did that.
It doesn't matter. It would have been controlling. You can't let somebody.
No,
come
you can't stop saying again. It's the problem.
I'm not going to stop saying let.
Yeah, the
it's
problem
exactly
I have.
You're trying to let them do.
No, the problem I have is with the phrasing, the fallacy of let.
Have another team.
You can if
come
they want
in and throw balls at.
Yes, you
Rizzo,
can because they're
Bryant,
going to do it no matter what
Baez.
You do.
No, they're not.
Yes,
you
they are.
Arenado, it's going to stop.
No,
it's going to stop.
It's not going to stop.
Eventually, it's going to stop. And it did.
No, it's not. The umpires will stop it.
So how many times do we have to let Brian get hit in the dome?
Again,
sent up the chin.
Nothing. It's the word. Here's the thing. Rephrase it. Rephrase your point without using the word let.
Man, I'll put it in any layman's terms you'd like. You put it in however you want to phrase it.
It's not layman's terms. Just rephrase
the opposite of layman's terms.
When we get down to the brass tacks of it, it's all the same.
Jay, can I ask you?
You have another team throw at your best players all day.
There's nothing you can do to stop it.
You did last night.
No,
I'm
the umpires did.
Brian wasn't in the game, so it wasn't necessarily stopping him.
Jay, get some more
yes, he is.
No, he's not.
Jay, let me ask you a question.
You're not afraid of anything.
Let me ask you a question, Jay. Hold on.
Go ahead.
You know the Cubs don't get the Rockies the rest of this season, right?
They do or they don't? Or
they do not. They don't play the Rockies the rest of the season. So just for what it's worth, right? Let's work with that premise. Let's say they get a one-game playoff. Let's say they get a five-game series. Do you think that any part... I'm genuinely curious. Do you think that any part of this beanball war will affect a playoff series between these two teams?
Absolutely. No one's throwing at anybody.
Because it's a playoff game, though. Not because
Correct.
Of some beef you... Well, but not because
Correct.
Of some beef you had in the middle of the season. It'll be... Because it's a playoff game, and you can't afford suspensions, and you can't afford losing players, and you can't afford injuries on either side for the rest of the series.
Look, losing Bryant, Baez, Rizzo, any of them right now is just as vital as it is going to be towards the end of the season.
Well, no. I'm asking these. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. Obviously, losing your best players is a bad thing to have happen, and the best way to do that is to engage in some sort of beanball war that's going to get everybody knocked out. What I'm asking is, you said that the Arenado hit by pitch put a stop to things. So the logic, the next question, then the follow up has to be, where then is it going to stop next time they play? And it's not going to be because he got hit, because Hamels hit him. It's going to be because it's a playoff game.
Yeah,
so the whole point of this beanball war the last 2 days was nothing by both sides.
And didn't Brock hit somebody in the ninth? And wasn't Hamels hit after that, too?
So there, yeah, Hamels was hit.
It's all a fallacy. This idea of it somehow self-polices and somehow keeps guys, we can't let that happen. It happened. You can't make it unhappen.
And still the most wrong thing he said is that he implied Dan would want anything in layman's terms.
David is in Galena. He's next on the score. Hi, David.
Hi, fellas. How you doing?
What's up?
Fine.
So in cricket, there's a similar type of ball. Now, we bounce the ball before it comes in, but if you've got a fast bowler that's bowling at about 90 miles an hour, if he throws the ball a bit shorter so it bounces higher, it has the same effect. It intimidates the batsman. They're going to try and get their head out of the way. Now, we wear helmets that have peaks out the front, technology, face grills. And if you guys Google a guy called Philip Hughes. It was maybe 7 years ago or something
Yankees
like that. He had a ball coming at him. He turned his head to try and protect himself. And it opened up the back of his neck, which was just under his helmet. And the ball hit him and it actually killed him.
Oh.
So I kind of think they're a bigger, and this is a professional cricketer, Australian cricketer, playing in a domestic competition,
mm-hmm.
and it just got him in that spot. So I think there's more to it than just, hit him and he got injured and, he's going to sit on the bench for the rest of the day and someone else will pick someone else later.
Yeah, I mean, there's inherent danger to this. I am I'm uncomfortable learning that much about cricket fast.
If you know this show, you know.
Kind of sandbag me there.
Yeah, that Connor McKnighton does not want to understand cricket.
Oh, and Connor, I drove by two cricket games this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, there's in Carroll Stream, there's like an area next to a park where they have it set up. And I guess on weekends there are matches that take place.
Oh my God!
Honestly,
Warren Park all the time.
All the cricketing.
It's nothing against cricket or even David. I'm just worried that if I start learning anything about cricket, it's going to force out other information that I need, and the brain space that I have, the functioning power that I've got is so small as it is. I'm barely hanging on. So if I learn anything more than wicked googly about cricket, I'm worried that something is going to fall out of my brain and I'll just be completely incapacitated.
On the south side, we find Delino. He is on the score as part of this discussion. Hi, Delino.
How you all doing?
Great.
Doing good. I got a question. I know before the series started against Colorado, or right after the first game, I believe it was, Joe Maddon said that they had played Chris Bryant because they knew he could get a couple home runs. I was wondering if you think that the Rockies that took that a little bit personal, and that's why they hit Chris Bryant a couple times in those games.
I would doubt it. It's Coors Field. Everybody can hit a home
right.
run there.
Who can't hit a home run?
I mean, like, I really don't. I understand the question. I get it. I don't think so. I think at Coors Field, you got to understand that anybody can get one up in the air and get one out.
Yeah, that's just part of it. Everyone's a power hitter there.
Yeah, I don't think so. By the way, speaking of, you know, Cubs get the Dodgers, and it's going to be Kershaw and Lester, which will be a fun one. It's a 9-10 start here tonight on the score. Have you read much about the Coors hangover effect?
No.
The potential of it. It's much debated. It's a hot topic between hitters and pitchers alike. But the idea is this, and I want to see if you buy into this. I want to see if Cubs fans, if our baseball fans have heard about this, have read about this, or believe in it at all. You know, when you go to Coors Field, your stuff doesn't break as much, right? Your curveball's not curving, your slider's not sliding, even your cutter doesn't cut quite as much in that thin, thin air. And we saw it happen a little bit, too. Steve Cishek got hit prior to the game just while warming up with Brandon Kinsley. You've seen the video. He goes down like a sack of potatoes. They're just playing catch on the down the left field line. And Cishek said that it was mostly because a cutter just kind of moved a little bit differently from Kinsler's hand in this thin air. It caught him in the hollow of the knee. It caught Cishek in the hollow of the knee, and he went down, and the Cubs are hoping that it's just a couple of days for a reliever that's been pretty important to Joe Maddon over the last year and a half or so. So it happens. It exists. Like, that is not in argument. What is, though, is this idea that a hitter gets up to Coors Field, and the Rockies have done some stuff to combat this, that you get up there and you're not seeing the top-notch stuff from any pitcher you face, right? So Cole Hamels was good yesterday, but Cole Hamels, that stuff would look better anywhere other than Coors Field. So now this offense, whether it's the Rockies or if you're there for a 3 or 4 game set as a visitor, now you go somewhere else. And now maybe you got used to that curveball not being quite as sharp. And now it's some sort of hangover effect. Some hitters,
sequencing changes because of your level of confidence in the feel of a certain pitch.
I'm talking about hitters, not necessarily. You know, they go from kind of seeing like it's like going to the batting cage, and instead of going to the fast pitch, you're at medium, and you're like, I can handle this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, you leave Colorado, and now you're going to L.A. or you know wherever.
Well,
and
there
everything's
statistical evidence of this?
There is a little bit, but because of a sample size, nobody's been able to kind of rule out the noise that might exist in it. But there are a number of hitters that'll tell you, the Rockies will take like extra cage sessions or a little extra BP or something like that just to get used to the way things break anywhere other than Colorado. I find it very, very interesting, and maybe it's something that that now with these cameras and with high tech stuff, you're able to kind of fight a little bit more once you leave Colorado. I don't know.
I love the direction the Texans are taking some of this stuff. Says, ha, Connor just learned the location of two cricket games in the Chicago area. There goes the name of his second grade teacher.
Mr. Barnes. Got it. That was close.
The 509 says, I'm imagining during one of the breaks, Connor learned so much about cricket he forgets how to breathe.
Shut up, what?
No, that's cerebellum and medulla oblongata, not necessarily cerebral cortex.
I've had that give up on me every now and again, too.
I think you're okay. This segment brought to you by Campland RV. Head on over to Campland RV for their 58th anniversary sale now through the end of June. Find great deals on RVs and campers. Campland RV, RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in northwest Indiana. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network and NFL.com will give us more national take on some stuff going on with the Bears. And you notice that there's a lot of these OTAs are being cut short by magnanimous coaches deciding to have the players say, oh, thanks.
You get the last day off.
Yeah, they're doing all kinds. It seems to be in fashion. I want to also find out what's going on with potential movement around the league toward 18-game schedule and where we are with that. And he's going to have the latest for us. So everything NFL with one of the top reporters out there nationally. Next with Bernstein and McKnight on the
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station, Ian Rappaport.
Here's what we know right now.
Insider for the NFL Network.
Get out your notebook. There's more.
Breaking news across the National Football League.
This is something that has been going on through the wee hours of last night, really round-the-clock discussions.
The Rap Sheet and Friends podcast.
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story, and I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Ian Rappaport with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, the Western Conference champion. Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making the 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. Ian Rappaport is on Twitter at Rapsheet. He's with NFL.com, NFL Network, and the Rapsheet and Friends podcast. This week, Gerald McCoy is the guest on the Rapsheet and Friends podcast, and he joins us right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. How are you, Ian?
What's going on? How you doing?
Well, we're dealing with the Bears kicker situation right now that has become absolute theatrical farce, and I don't know what to make of it. It gets sillier and sillier and worse as we go, and it's I don't know how aware the Bears are, but are we getting to like national laughingstock levels here?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the only thing that probably caused at least some rivals to laugh was the most important kick of the season bouncing twice off the upright and are bouncing, you know, once off the upright, once off the crossbar, and kind of falling harmlessly to the turf ending the season. I think, you know, probably the Packers and maybe the Lions and Vikings all kind of laughed about that. Everything else, to me, is sort of just due diligence. And, you know, I know it's silly. I know the different ways that the Bears have tried to kind of cycle through kickers and sign a whole bunch of dudes you've never heard of and just try to find the right formula. I know it's a bit ridiculous, but so are kickers, you know? I mean, the whole thing is really strange, and it's a different animal. And however they get to the right answer, to me, it sort of doesn't matter as long as you have someone you can rely on starting in September.
There's a couple of us here at the station, Ian, that are of the opinion that whatever, you know, name kicker gets cut from somebody when they go from 90 to 53 will be the Bears guy. I'm in that camp. Is that your assumption, or am I thinking the Bears are going to actually follow this creative process to the end?
I think, you know, if you sort of look at the landscape of all this, I think it's pretty fair to assume that, you know, there's a decent chance the Bears' starting kicker for next year is not on the roster. I mean, we see kicker movement all the time. I mean, the guy who just recently, you know, became the highest paid kicker in the NFL, you know, right, Will Lutz for the New Orleans Saints, I believe was signed literally the day before the season 2 years ago, if I remember correctly.
The other domino there was that the kicker that they chose Lutz above was Connor Barth, and that's why Ryan Pace ended up signing Connor Barth to the Bears.
Right. And I just remember it was weird for me because I got a text that says, why is someone named Will Lutz walking through our locker room? And I was like, I have no idea, but I probably should find out. But yeah, so I think there's so much kicker movement. There's so much, you know, guys who will miss a couple kicks in preseason, then be cut if there's a competition. Like, there is so much movement that someone is going to emerge, even if the Bears, you know, start training camp, say, without full confidence in the kickers on their roster. I mean, there's also, you know, some old dudes who are still out there. I mean, Sebastian Janikowski retired. Could he be coaxed out of retirement for the right money? He probably could. You know, there's some other guys who are at least out there and have some experience that the Bears could theoretically sign.
Do you get a sense, or does anybody tell you around the league, that the Bears just have trouble evaluating that position? We've been asking about, teams have those reputations that you just can't find, you know, cornerbacks, or you just can't evaluate tight ends, or whatever it is. Is there a positional element to this, or where are we at?
I haven't heard that so much with the Bears. What I have heard is just the sort of frustration or confusion with the Robbie Gould move a couple years ago. You know, I think that's probably the thing that throws everyone for a loop. And since then, since Robbie left and has obviously been very good, everything since then has been kind of downhill. You know, I'm not sure if it's lack of evaluating kickers. I think it's more, at least from, you know, my thoughts and from talking to people who do this for a living in the NFL, it's really more like finding a bullpen in baseball where you kind of try to throw a bunch of stuff at a wall. One guy sticks, catches fire, and there's your guy. And sometimes the last 15 years, sometimes the last 2 or 3 years. You know, it's really just more they haven't found the right formula yet. You know, and on the Robbie Gould thing, like, I'm actually still not sure I know the answer to that one, honestly.
Another topic here is that of the future of Mitchell Trubisky as he continues to ascend in the University of Matt Nagy here, and when, in fact, he's going to get his inevitable contract extension, or when those talks are going to begin. The Carson Wentz contract obviously has spurred a lot of this speculation, and I'm wondering where the threshold is now for the quarterback mega deal, where we always have those tired and warmed over debates about elite and what he deserves. Isn't the fact now that
Dak Prescott's going through that right now?
Right, but isn't the truth, you're just good enough if a team thinks they've got a bird in the hand and they don't have to go wandering through the quarterback wilderness, that's just the price of football business now?
Yeah, I'm not sure I could say it better, because it's really just, you know, you have varying degrees of franchise quarterbacks. You have your, you know, Tom Brady's or Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees, like, you know, those guys are going to get paid, obviously. Top of the market, like, whichever one of those guys is next is going to get top of the market, and then he's going to get beat by whichever next guy is. You know what I mean? So when you're that good and you get a contract extension, you beat the next guy, right? Then the next sort of group of quarterbacks is, like, just franchise guys. And that's when you have a quarterback and you are done looking. And obviously the Eagles are with Carson Wentz. Obviously, the Cowboys are with Dak Prescott, who's no doubt going to get a deal that's going to eclipse $30 million. I think Carson Wentz's deal sealed that. And then there's just everyone else. And, you know, wherever the Bears are now with Mitchell Trubisky, you know, my sense is they are not looking for a quarterback and don't plan on looking for a quarterback for a long time. I mean, barring something crazy, I think they are good. And so then it's do a deal as early as possible, because the price only goes up. Like, you know, the Eagles had some injury risk with Carson Wentz, but if you think those injuries are random or not going to be repeated, then they did a great job blocking him in at $32 million per year on a deal that on an extension that basically starts in 2 years, because, you know, pretty soon, like, if Wentz is the MVP this year, then he probably will have left $4 or $5 million on the table. I think that's something the Eagles will take.
Is the new frontier on quarterback deals from a team perspective just futzing with the guaranteed money and creating, you know, outs for themselves a little bit like the Jags did with Blake Bortles? Or are you hearing, you know, other kind of creative bargaining issues that teams are trying to use given the state of quarterbacking?
Yeah, I think that the deal with the Jaguars and Blake Bortles is one that nobody wants to do. You know, to me, that was kind of worst case scenario I guess it worked out well for Blake. He got, you know, $7 extra million that he wouldn't have gotten from being cut, plus all that extra money on. I think it ended up being basically for him a total of $7 million more dollars. You know, you don't want that. What you want to do, if you're a team, like, yes, going heavy on the guaranteed money works because it gives the player security, but the reality is you're not going to cut him anyway. You know, if you're a quarterback and you believe in yourself, you know, I feel like you'd rather take the high-end dollars and maybe give a little bit in the guaranteed money because you trust yourself and you know the team's not going to cut you. You know, like if Derek Carr was free, Derek Carr doesn't have, I don't think, any fully guaranteed money left on his contract. That's why we were talking about him as a possible trade. That's why, you know, if he doesn't do well in, with the Raiders this year, he's probably going to be cut or traded. He's going to sign for a lot of money. He has that confidence and he has that ability. You know, I sort of would rather, if I was a quarterback, give up some of the guaranteed money for the high-end yearly rate because you know you're going to get it.
We know Matt Nagy's been trying to have some fun to keep things light and interesting at OTAs and at these various mini camps. And now we've got this fashion of coaches springing it on players late in their practices. Like, look, you don't have to come in tomorrow or we're doing something else tomorrow. It's sort of like when you're, you know, in third grade and say, we're going to have class outside today. Is this just a new fashion?
Oh, that was always so great. Yes. And, you know, it is crazy, and I'm sure this will be debated for those who are still paying attention before the summer, over the next couple of days is, you know, everyone fights for more practice time but then cancels the last practice or whatever it is. But what you find out is that during the off season, injury risk is always so great and a little scary. I mean, you can't pretend these guys are in as good a shape now as they will be, let's say, in late August. So, you know, three practices in a row is a little scary to some teams because it does increase the injury risk and guys are get sloppy and tired and sometimes bad things happen. So what you see a lot of times is instead of three practices in a row, you cancel a third practice. Everybody goes bowling or mini golf or, you know, top golf or bocce ball or whatever. But I also think that, you know, once you sort of get out of the grind of like, all right, we need to kill these guys, two practices a day, 4 hours at a time, like, once you get out of that grind, then it's, you know, that thinking is basically gone. So then it's like, well, let's just get these guys, you know, they get in good shape themselves, basically. Let's get them to want to play for us, and giving them a day off to go play darts is not a bad thing.
Ian, reports are out that the Patriots have filed tampering charges against the Texans over Nick Cassiero. Can you X and O this a little bit for us, and what's the next couple of steps in this story?
Yeah, so that is true. The Patriots filed tampering charges against the Texans. And, you know, it's pretty clear that Nick Cassiero is the Texans' number one target. They want him to be their GM. It is hard to, right now, bring him back in New England after you've, you know, filed tampering charges to try to keep him there. To me, just kind of, you know, reading the tea leaves here, it feels like this ends in some sort of agreement for compensation, you know, because, you know, are the Patriots really going to hold Belichick's right-hand man hostage in a place he doesn't want to be? I have a hard time believing that. And then if you're the Texans, do you really go through all of this if, you know, you're going to, if Nick Cassiero is going to stay in New England? Probably not. So this, you know, to me, this feels like this ends in some sort of deal where the two sides come up with compensation and say, all right, well, Nick Cassiero can be your GM for, I don't know, a fifth-round pick or something like that.
Ian, I know you got some downtime coming. We appreciate your time as always, but enjoy whatever vacation you got coming.
A lot of golf, guys.
Nice.
Golf.
Good for you. Thanks. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network and NFL.com. Let's check in right now with the U.S. Open leaderboard to let you know what is going on at Pebble Beach. Scott Piercy is through five. He is three under. And then there is a group now at one under. Luis Gagne through six. Emiliano Grillo through five. Jovan Rebula, an amateur, is through three. Kyle Stanley is through two. And John Rahm birdied the first hole and is also at one under. U.S. Open coverage is brought to you by the BMW Championship at Medina Country Club. Boy, I'm on brand with my
You are. Look at you.
August 13th through August 18th, 2019. Visit BMWChampionship.com. The Midday Midway is coming up. I have a place that really is making a pitch for you to move there. They want you to live there, and they are telling you why. Also, I have a disaster that could be facing the planet Earth that we hadn't thought about before, and we have no control over it, and it could doom us all.
Technology run amok, and perhaps a new food choice for your everyday. It's the Midday Midway. It's coming up next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Midday Midway brought to you by Eon Clinics. So we started out by talking about all the guys getting hit by baseballs in Coors Field yesterday and what was going on and what the protocols are and why we still do it. And then all the angry people on Twitter calling us the P word because we don't like the fact that pitchers can just throw a projectile at someone's head that could kill them. And therefore, that's somehow rough or tough or some extension of one's manliness by inflicting violence on somebody else, and that's good because that's the way it's been done. And Ron Coomer, a vigorous defender of the old school baseball and how it's done, and we kind of walked through all of it, of what's real, what's not, how it plays out, how grudgingly players seem to go through the perfunctory dance of all this.
And how a lot of them, many players, are not really willing to play this game anymore. They're not interested. Some are, but a lot aren't interested in engaging in this stuff that they've been doing for decades.
We gave away Cubs Sox tickets. We'll give away more Cubs Sox tickets. And we talked football with Ian Rappaport.
So you've seen this all over the place. There's the Impossible Burger, right? The Burger King was pitching. There's the Beyond Meat stuff. I guess this is big business now.
Just yesterday, I was noticing it in Mariano's. They've got Impossible Italian Sausage or Beyond Meat. Brats that aren't brats. Sausages that aren't sausages.
Have you had any of this stuff yet?
Do you know how difficult it is to get space in Chicago grocery stores, in main groceries?
It
is a war. Shelf space is when people talk about food wholesaling and how the politics and the economics of getting stuff, they must be incredibly powerful because they have just appeared with high-end shelf space in the major grocery stores.
So one of the biggest names, Tyson Foods, is now launching their first plant-based protein brand called Raised and Rooted. That's the line. They're now making nuggets, vegetarian nuggets that taste like chicken, and blended burgers that still contain some beef but are arguably more healthy. I don't know. I can't tell if I'm interested in this or not. Every time we do, you know, the vegetarian stuff, we'll get somebody on the text line reminding everybody how much of a carbon footprint meat has, especially beef, and how bad for the environment is, how bad for you it might be, all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of people who testify to this as being good for you and good tasting. I know the fats aren't interested in it. I'm somewhat interested in it, I guess.
I would try it.
But there's a report in the New Food Economy. As Beyond Meat went public in May, they got a $1 billion valuation. They went in May.
Yep.
Just for making hamburgers and hot dogs that aren't made of hamburger and hot dog and plant stuff instead. I couldn't believe it was that big of business. I suppose it's going to get its way into it. And I would imagine, too, we are not long. You know, the White Sox have had a veggie burger at the place, or a turkey burger for a little while, which is, you know, I know it's not a veggie burger, but it's a different option. I would imagine we're pretty close to having this kind of stuff in ballparks everywhere, not just, you know, San Francisco or New York or something like that.
It's probably true, but you know where I am on this. I totally agree with you regarding the carbon footprint and all that. Insects.
Yeah, well,
I've got an alternative protein rather than having to use whatever it is, the pea flour or whatever they've got in
then
there.
You'll really enjoy leftovers next week.
Meet the Irish island of Aranmore. It's an idyllic island 5 kilometers off the coast of County Donegal. They want to boost their population because its population is down to just 469 people. The island is writing open letters to the people of the United States and Australia, urging them to relocate there.
Really?
So here's the offer. Tell me if you're interested in hearing this. They're being offered the chance to swap the hustle and bustle of big cities for the calm and beauty of Erinmore. The island has recently undergone huge technological advancement and has become the recipient of Ireland's very first offshore digital hub. So not only are they offering new residents the chance of a delightful place to which to retire, the community is trying to make the island an attractive place for families and business people who work remotely. Erinmore has internet speeds rivaling Dublin, London, and New York City. And they list graphic designers, game developers, photographers, and app developers as some of the professionals who've made successful careers working on the island. And the letter says, your commute, no matter where you are, will only ever be 5 minutes. You'll have the best diving in Ireland on your doorstep.
The best diving?
Diving. Seafood to rival the tastiest New England chowder.
Ooh.
There are fewer people here than would fit in a couple of Amtrak carriages, but enough musicians and good Irish whiskey to keep the party going well into the night. The island is just 5 miles by 3 miles wide, is smattered with rocky cliffs, stretched beaches, and sea caves.
Huh.
So the population's been dropping rapidly, and it's hoped that with the advent of high-speed internet, by reaching out to America and Australia, Erinmore can attract enough people to transform it into one of the most attractive places to live. You in? You
it's,
open to it?
It's absolutely gorgeous. I'm looking through photos right now. I mean, these things, there are ruins and old lighthouses and cliffs and crags and stuff. It doesn't look like it's that far from the main island. I mean, like you could, not I, but someone could swim across this distance. You know what it looks like? Some of the uninhabited photos? The island that Luke Skywalker is on?
Yes.
In, I forget the name of that planet because I haven't committed any of those to memory yet.
Where old Luke is in seclusion.
Yeah, where they've got like the weird little guys, you know, stomping on lightsabers and Chewie's eating one or two of them. It looks like, I mean, it can't be far, all that, that far from that island anyway.
There's the giant manatee with the green milk.
Yeah, yeah, you got to eat one of those things. Huh, interesting. Okay, so there is, we always like to keep up with the ways the world is ending here on the Midday Midway, and this story comes to us from Coronado, California. Around a dozen beachgoers in Coronado, California got more than they expected Tuesday afternoon after being stung by stingrays. 10 to 15 people were stung by increased stingray activity. Different stingrays, too. Obviously, this kind of thing hurts. They can kill. I mean, that's how the crocodile hunter went down, right? He got one right to the heart.
Yes.
They are somewhat dangerous.
Bad spot.
Lifeguards say a rise in ocean temperatures increased stingray activity. They were pushed up onto the beach trying to find warmer waters. That, in turn, bring people closer to stingrays. And when people get that close to stingrays, stingrays sting people. So,
eat them, too.
Just another... What? Eat who?
Stingrays.
You eat stingrays?
Oh, sure.
You can eat stingrays.
It's like skate wing.
They were all like... Skate wing? What the hell is a skate? Is that like cartilage?
A skate is a relative of a shark and a ray, and it's delicious. It's in fact, sought-after meat.
What do they taste like? Like a jerky kind of thing? Or what do you do with
it? No, it's a big white fish fillet. There's a wonderful...
Really?
Yeah. Go get the stingray at...
They seem so thin and fibrous.
No. They're huge and meaty. Go to Sticky Rice at Western and Irving Park.
Been there.
And order the stingray shu-chi.
Okay.
It is a very spicy coconut curry that
sold.
Is phenomenal.
Sold.
Can you tell I'm hungry? All roads lead back to food. Astronomers have learned over the past decade that large solar flares, powerful bursts of radiation from our sun, are small potatoes compared to some of the flares we see around other stars. It is now common to spot super flares, hundreds of thousands more powerful, hundreds of times more powerful than the sun's flares. And earlier this year, researchers identified a star that emitted a turbocharged flare some 10 billion times more energetic than are seen bursting from the sun. And generally, they come from young, active stars. However, new research presented at the 234th meeting of the American Astronomical Society in St. Louis shows that even our sun is capable of producing some astoundingly powerful flares.
Excellent.
And they also believe that we are overdue.
Well, excuse me?
According to Yuta Natsu of the University of Colorado Boulder, said, our study shows that super flares are rare events, but there is a possibility that we could experience such an event in the next 100 years or so.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. So what is that? That's like an EMP, essentially? Or are we talking about something that actually throws off the magnetic field itself?
Great question. Now, I did not know this. In September of 1859, a solar flare sent a wave of charged particles washing over Earth. It triggered one of the most powerful geomagnetic storms ever recorded, referred to as the Carrington Event, which is a Ludlum novel, whether it has to be. As the particles slammed into Earth's protective magnetic field, they triggered beautiful aurorae that stretched as far south as Hawaii and Cuba. Wow. You ever seen the Aurora Borealis?
No, I haven't.
I've seen it many times, and it is astonishing.
Love to go see it.
Absolutely
awesome
astonishing. It wreaked havoc on telegraph networks spread across North America and Europe. In fact, there are reports of the cosmically overcharged telegraph lines starting fires and shocking telegraph operators during the event. So, what would it do today? Because we are so interconnected and electronic, the assessment would be large-scale blackouts, satellite communication failure, strong radiation in space, which could do serious damage to instruments and astronauts alike.
Go Bears!
Natsu says we need to work on protecting our electronics and investing in radiation shielding and backup systems. He says this topic should start to be considered seriously from now on.
Yeah, we'll get right to that.
Yep, we're right on it.
Jeez. That's never getting addressed. This from The Takeout, one of my favorite websites on the planet. We're going to do more food here. It has been 15 years since Mountain Dew first unleashed Baja Blast. Long story short, there is now a new Mountain Dew flavor paired especially for KFC's original recipe chicken. We are making sodas to pair with fried chicken. And to your earlier point, you know, where Utsu says that we have to shield all of our communications devices and satellites and things like that. You know why we're not doing that? Because we're busy making sodas that match our fried chicken. Are you kidding me?
And the ruling from the I'm Fat podcast is... Got a little Ron Coomer in you there.
Well,
I'm curious. Okay. Go on.
All right.
Well,
I'm good.
That is the Midday Midway. We do every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We'll get back to the Cubs and Rockies and the Cubs and Dodgers later tonight with our guy, Len Casper. He's going to join us just after a few.
We also have Cubs Sox tickets to give away at some point in the next hour. And after Len Casper, I want to bring up some issues regarding a White Sox promotion that people seem to have, and I think it's legit. That's all coming up. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.